and he also has
curated exhibitions, conducted workshops, and coordinated a vast array of cultural projects. Jace has exhibited at a wide range of venues, from, as he says, the smallest unnamed storefronts and community centres, to institutions such as the Musée du Louvre in Paris, Museum of Modern Art, and events such as the Biennale of Sydney and the Rotterdam International Film Festival, plus many, many more that we don't have time to go through. His texts and works have been featured in many publications, including Third Text, Semiotext, Fuse. A monograph on his work, Jace Saloum, A History of the Present, was published in 2009. In fact, there's a copy of it on the table over there. And Jace is a recipient of the 2014 Governor General's Award in Visual and Media Arts from Canada, which, as a fellow Canadian, is a big deal. I think I've been fantastic. In addition to his work in Lebanon, which you see mostly what you see around you, he's also conducted, amongst other things, workshops in Afghanistan, and back in Canada has been involved with First Nations issues for a long time. He had a long collaboration with the Native Youth Art Workshops in Kamloops, British Columbia, and has made two films, he was just telling me, he made two films about First Nations issues. One of them, which was about residential schools for First Nations children, plus many other events. And Jace was also saying he's just got a grant for a curatorial workshop, a large-scale curatorial workshop as well. Kayleen Wilson-Goldie, as Octavian said when I was saying I need to get some details together to introduce Kayleen. Octavian said, everybody knows Kayleen. So Kayleen is a writer and critic based in Beirut, contributing editor for Bidoun. She writes regularly for, again, amongst many other things, Art Forum Freeze and The Daily Star.
No Daily Star.
She used to write for The Daily Star, but not anymore. As a journalist, she has written for The New York Times, Village Voice, Times of London, amongst many others as well, and amongst art publications, Art Journal and Art Margins, on subjects ranging from video art, experimental music, and public space, post-war Beirut, monographic texts on the work of Rabia Mbue, Walid Rar, Akram Zatari, and Salwarada Shuker. She's currently working on a series of essays commissioned by the Bohem Foundation on funding and other forms of support for contemporary art in the Middle East. She was a 2000 fellow in the Annenberg Getty Arts Journalism Program in LA and is a graduate of the American University of Beirut, Columbia University, and the University of Virginia. That introduces our stellar list of speakers. And so now I'll hand over to Octavian, who'll just say a few words about the curatorial outlay of the project.
I will say a little bit, I guess, on about the framework and what was our idea and what we expected or wanted to accomplish with this project in a way.
She wants slide right back.
Okay, I'll try. I don't know if I can shout. So the idea was that, you know, art history and art historians, they like to periodize. They like to think about cultural forms in terms of historical styles and epochs. So in our case, our project was somehow naively, maybe I should say, had this idea that let's try and make an attempt to periodize contemporary art in Lebanon. Like, I did a little bit of research. I read articles of critics writing about this new paradigm, let's call it contemporary art, because as you all know, it's now extremely fashionable and it's very present in other places. People are asking themselves all the time, what is contemporary art? So I thought, well, let's try and ask ourselves, what is contemporary art here in Lebanon? Then, so I wrote my curatorial statement, we printed it, we put it on the wall. Then I ran into someone, says, yeah, but you know, contemporary art is not really the 90s. It comes after. It comes with the Ford money. It comes with the institutions. The 90s was a time when artists used to do art in the public sphere. artists used to be free of institutions. They didn't have to work with all of these agents which are now everywhere around them. After that, I ran into another colleague of mine. Says, no, contemporary art actually starts early. It starts in the 80s. You can already speak about the Civil War. Already you find artists who adopted this paradigm, I'll call it, or I don't know how to call it. So, I mean, it looks like periodizing contemporary Lebanese art, we run basically in the same problems that other cultural contexts have already run into. Like, if you look in the Western world, people speak about the beginning of the contemporary after World War II, some talk about the 60s, some talk about 1889. So that different events in history in which different people try to find a point of departure, when a new form of sensibility among artists, among institutions, among critics and historians begin to emerge, a new form of relating to reality, relating to art, relating to artists, relating to I'm sorry?
No, so I can't hear you, that's okay.
You can't or you can't?
Yeah, but I'm hard of hearing, so I'm getting
that. Ah, okay.
Sorry.
So, in any case, I don't think that we will be here or we will be able to find one event, one historical event, or to find one point of departure in which we will say that Lebanese contemporary art starts from, I don't know, like end of the Civil War. But we decided to create such an event where we invited an artist who was in the 90s very active here, who came from Canada, right,
and worked on it.
From New York, worked on a project. The project is Kanya Akan, which we invited him to exhibit here, and use this as an opportunity for us here and for those interested in those questions that we ask to see where can we go with this. Can we speak about periodization, or maybe we shouldn't even speak about it at all, and we can just speak about individual artists, and we don't harder to generalize or to try to draw a line or to make a conclusion. But since we are in an academic context, since we are in a university, we have to kind of to try to make sense of this, try to unify all this experience, all of this knowledge. So I guess was the main idea of this project. So that was what was expected from us, or what we had in mind when we decided to organize this project. And I hope now that Helene and Jace will have the discussion, and maybe we will see how successful this project was in trying to achieve what we proposed.
I think we had the idea of, and because there's not so many of you, to do actually a walkthrough of the show, and I'll ask questions and Jace will talk about the actual work as we move through it and then come back and continue the discussion. But just maybe as a setup, I'm going to tell a small story, which is I started really sort of seriously reading and researching about Lebanese contemporary art in 2002. And I started learning about a number of projects by artists who had invented characters. So I was reading about the Atlas Group and Fadl Fakhouri, the gambling historian, who's a fictional character, Operator 17, the melancholy security agent who watches the sunset every day instead of following his people, Abdallah Farah, and these are projects from Waleed Rad and the Atlas Group, Abdallah Farah, the photographer who starts to burn his negatives during the Civil War, which is a project by Joanna Hajituma and Khalil Jerej. The more I was learning about these works and the more the sort of circle of artists I was coming into contact with, I was sure that some of these artists did not exist. And I was sure that some of these artists were in fact fictional characters that had been invented by other artists. So imagine my surprise in 2005 when I went to the Sharjah Biennial And in this room, this huge installation, in walks Jay Salum, who was like character number one that I was sure was an actual person. And I ended up around that time writing a lot about this work, only from reproductions, so only from photographs and only from asking him a million questions over email. So it's a real pleasure to actually be in a room with the material and to have this opportunity to go through it and talk to him, because it really, in the sort of the narrative and the periodization, it's an incredibly important work for a number of different reasons that I hope we can talk to Jace about. But I wanted to maybe to start to figure out why you came here in 92.
Oh, 92, I think, but now.
No. I mean, what? Because how did the trip here and the time you spent here start to become a project and a work and an installation?
Thanks. That's a great introduction. Thanks, both of you guys too.
And we can mobilize.
Yeah, let's start here, and then we'll move on. We'll come back to rest. So, well, in 88, I came here in 88 for the first time. The 80s were full of us artists and writers and people using, is there a radio on or something? Oh, sorry, I hear sounds.
Yeah.
Must be from outside. So we were really engaged with appropriation in the 80s. For any of you that were alive and practicing back then, there was I was living in New York during that time, and no, actually, yeah, in the 80s, and then I went to New York in 88. So right before I went to New York, I was in grad school in San Diego, and that spring before I finished, I for some reason I got into my brain that I needed to go to Lebanon during. When the conflict was, on a level that where it was still difficult to move around. So, actually, initially, my project was to go to Palestine and occupy territories in Israel and the Gaza Strip. That's what it was, right? It was the first contemporary intifada. You know, there was lots of previous intifadas in Palestine, but nobody talks about those. It's like the first one happened in 1987, in most people's memories. And so December 87, so I decide, well, this is something really important. And I arranged a trip, so I left in January. I went to Gaza in January. And I thought, okay, I'm going to Gaza, I'm going to Palestine, I'm going to the West Bank, I might as well go to Lebanon, you know. It's where my grandparents come from, and I'm interested in these issues of representation, of appropriation, of the construction of the image, of construction of knowledge, of how we come to learn about a place, how do we come to learn about a culture from afar, and all these images that we're seeing of, for lack of a better word, I'm going to use Middle East, okay, so don't ask me about, it's not the Middle East, it's the Middle West, no. There's actually a line in one of these videos that compares the Middle East to the Middle West, Midwest of America, and it superimposes the Middle East on the Midwest of a map. It's quite good. It's from one of these American news shows. That's quite funny. So that's actually the tape. When I came back, so I shot... how do I make this short and condensed? So I came to Lebanon after... When going to Palestine, Israel, occupied territories, living in Jabalia, where the intifada started, and then shooting 40 hours of material there, coming here, going to Cyprus, coming by boat, coming here, and just being here for a couple of weeks, and coming up to the Green Line, staying in Sinafil, where a friend of my brother's family was, and staying with his family, people I didn't know, but it was very good. People were very it was pre-cell phone, so people were very hospitable, and. Showing me around, taking me to the Green Line, you know, showing me how to get through checkpoints and all that. So, but it was still very constrictive, like we couldn't travel freely, right? And there was huge containers blocking all the roads, basically, along Rue Damas and the Green Line. And sometimes you could get through, sometimes you couldn't. So I thought, okay, man, I got to come back to this place. This is all these issues of representation that I'm referring to and making work about and writing about are getting played out on the ground here. And it wasn't so much about my ethnic identity, but that was just sort of a subtext. And I try not to even mention that because that's sort of superfluous. It's like coming to Beirut for the food, right? Which is why I came back. No. But I did have kenefe again today. But Sunday we had fateh, kenefe, and booze and ice cream all in one morning.
Nice.
Yeah. So anyways, so I came back. So I went back to, where was it, San Diego, and I was on my way to New York to do this post-grad program. And I got enough, I got this grant money. Sorry, that's in 88. So I moved to New York later on that year. I looked up a bunch of Palestinian people, filmmakers, other people, writers, trying to find somebody to work with to help translate the stuff I had shot in the Gaza and in the West Bank. And I interviewed a bunch of people and came across this young guy who was really feisty and interesting, Ilya Sleiman, who just sort of like had this great negotiation tactic, and he says, okay, if I work with you, we have to use all of your found material, like found material, and we have to go and look at film images from the invention of film to contemporary times. And I was kind of like humming and hawing, because all my previous four films were all appropriated footage from TV material, and it's really a pain in the ass. It's really labor intensive, looking up, you know, digging up the stuff and editing it, because it goes on forever. And there's that one piece here that has a bit of that. So I said, yeah, sure. So anyways, that film is here. It's Introduction to the End of an Argument, Speaking for Oneself, Speaking for Others. It's got a very long title, and that's just the English title. There's the Arabic title. I won't embarrass myself. So I came, that was in New York, so I was applying for grants. I got enough money together, knowing that I wanted to come back here for a long period of time, so I thought I would come back for a year. 1992, and during that time, when I was in New York, I'd been showing, and this young guy who was still in grad school phoned me up one day and go, really wanted to meet. So we met a few times. It was Waleed Rad, and he volunteered very graciously to do research and produce documents, and some of the documents are here, some of the bibliographies, and research materials. And he just, you know, we kept in contact, and he would do bits and pieces of work. And when he came to New York, and then I got this grant, and I said, look, would you like to be my assistant in Lebanon? I can pay for your ticket. I can pay for our food and expenses, and that's about it. And he said, sure. So he came a few weeks ahead of me, and you can see his day of departure somewhere there in the first week of second week of January, and to set things up. So we came with the intent of spending the year working here, not really knowing much about what exactly we wanted to do, but my plan was, and my proposal that I got the money for, was to bring five video cameras here, keeping one for myself, but letting four being made available to people, anybody who wanted to come and borrow them to make their own short films. And we had a little high editing suite, which was a deck about this big. It was all high eight video. So that was the initial project, and then I knew I would be doing work around that. So that was sort of the pretext, and that's what we got the money for coming for. And we had these ongoing dialogues, Waleed and I, that are part of the This Is Not Beirut film, tape, whatever, over there, the right-hand side, about, you know, why I want to do this, why is this important, I mean, what do these people have to say anyways? I mean, they don't know what's really going on. They just happen to live here, et cetera, et cetera. Or that we're, you know, that I'm presupposing this and later, you know, that they actually, and I'm controlling, you know, the paradigm or the construct of this, right? Having things made and bringing them back into the West for showing. So all that stuff is, we sort of have alter ego discussions going on throughout This Is Not Beirut, that film over there. So yeah, does that answer your question?
Sure. Okay. And at what point did Up to the South as a film emerge as an idea?
So what happens is we get here, we start dialoguing with whoever we can. I have a list of names I had started with, and then, you know, finding people that recommend other people and they recommend other people. And you can see some of this charting out into those four pages that are enlarged of my notebook. So that's the way I work. It's sort of tactile. It's important for me to be able to draw out things and map things out. So we're mapping out, you know, what we think are the important issues, the divisions of the conflict, of the area, and one of the major things that we're coming back to is the South and the occupation of the South. So we start, you know, we start recording conversations with a lot of people, and then we start going down south, and we start meeting a lot of detainees, and we make that one of the focuses of conversations with former detainees and people that are involved in resistance activities, either currently or before or during. And we are, you know, people are borrowing the cameras that are living down south, so they're bringing back footage as well. And they're also mining the archives of like LTV and UTV, and I was trading my films for their archives, so I was trading two of my films, which are probably stuck in a drawer just rotting away, for like 50 hours of their archives. I got copies and copies and copies of everything, and people would give us archives. Like, I remember Mimosa Arawi was one of the people that came and used our cameras and made some stuff. She brought back a tape her dad had recorded, a VHS tape, of all during the Civil War. I'm just going to call it the Civil War period, just because, of course, we know that it never ended and it keeps going on just in other forms, but just to designate, like, you know, from 73 till 92. So he had recorded that whole news coverage, not news coverage, but news presenters. And it's right, the most basic, you know, backgrounds and paper and how the technology changes throughout the period, so like things like that. And another guy, AFP reporter Stringer, gabe us all his raw footage from Sabra and Shatila. So I've, you know, some of that stuff I've used, and some I still have never had a chance to use. So, anyways, so the South became a theme. So we went to the South. We pretended we were doing a film about the economics of the region. So we got into the occupied South. They assigned a collaborator to work with us. And so we did a lot of shooting, and we found out all about collaboration and how complex these things are, and that collaborators have many different allegiances and loyalties, and they will reveal things that, you know, that they're, you know, they'll turn a blind eye to some things, but then, you know, try to pretend they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. And then we filmed conversations with the right-hand man of Antoine Lahad, the military commandant. So that material sort of demanded a more sort of direct approach. I had never filmed people talking before. It was always appropriated material. So that film has a very distinct look, but I still want to intervene in it and sort of have a critique of the documentary format, which this whole installation, there's critiques about different methodologies, not just documentary, but anthropology and ethnographies. And within that one film, Up to the South, it looks like a documentary, and people would think it's a documentary, but it's not. So we coined this term pseudo-documentary, just for lack of a better term. And this is not Beirut, it's paired with it. So it's like sort of the opposite type of construction.
Do you want to go?
We'll go. We'll walk through it before everybody leaves.
Okay.
We can bring your bag.
That's what the readings do, go by there all certain days. It's the end of this is not the end. It's like five or six shots over different months, different days, and the same 2 seconds. So that's Up to the South. This is not the end. I've never shown them in this format, but for this installation, I wanted it to be more comprehensive. Usually the videos are tucked away in the video library, but I wanted to forefront the rest of the installation with the video. And there's also a video library that we end up with. This is just sort of a general paradigm of the installation, but you can enter it in however you want. It's meant to be like a series of files, or back in our day it was actually CD-ROMs, which was a basic, it was called hypertext. Anyways, it was pre-internet. And you would go to one level and click and go to another level, another level. So you can basically find your own group within the different file systems here. And then within each area of the wall, which is basically defined by these, and sort of trying to reach the archers as well as using them, is different clusters of axes signifying signification and also significant sites. So, and both historically and geographically, but just idiosyncratically of the practice. So this area is sort of an introductory area about the reconstruction of Beirut and the beginnings of our projects. And all these things with clips you can remove and hopefully not destroy it and look at. take them to the desk. So throughout the installation, you'll see, for lack of a better word, we have a lot of deconstructive acts. And the same way that this is actually the original, you can see the layout. These are all quotes. The same way that I edit chapter footage is the way that I edit the work of text. So I'll mark up and cut up text and enlarge the area. So these are basically quotes or fragments of text, both prose, journalistic, and personal text, faxes back and forth from people I'm working with, photos, and also letters and new stuff. So these specifically are about construction, and they have all these conferences about reconstruction of Bourges in the 90s. This is, and there's all these maps, and they're looking at Munich and Dusseldorf, post-war in Germany, and those acts of reconstruction. And this is all before Solidaritas had its grips on the area. So those are some specimens, basically, and documents. So that's tied into like the Bourges as it was then. Actually, this is a year later. This is 93, might be 94. Akram took these pictures after I had left because these weren't up when I was there, but I heard they were up. So he took these billboard pictures, and this is without the Solidaire nomenclature. So I thought these orphan billboards sort of projected this nice Orwellian vision onto the. This is the way it looked when I was here. This is a picture. I shouldn't touch it. Sure, my gloves. Photos. And so this is the video of the Bourges, of the Orient building. I mean, it's the Orient Watch building. Now in Hamra, they have a very similar skeletal billboard of that watch sign. So what happens in this reel, this loop, is this is taken from this film. It's a series of headlines and descriptions and metaphors of Beirut and of Lebanon, and it traces the history of from during the Civil War, pre-Civil War, Civil War, and after 1990 about the Paris of the Middle East and all that stuff, and then more questionable, contradictory, like a bastard state and all these. And so it goes through these different shifts in reading Beirut, reading Lebanon from afar or from within. Some of these are from journals that were based here. So this shot is like Beirut from a distance. The grayed out image of Beirut ready for projection, basically. And here you have Mataf. I don't know, you probably all know that during the conflicts, these were covered, the objects. Some objects were chosen to be covered as concrete blocks. You have those there, and then the beginning of the shelf sort of parallels those clusters where you have shots taken within and outside of the museum that were actually not by me. Those were shot by, I never got inside when I was here. Those are Mukhtar Kokesh who made those images. So there's an older slide. So that's that area. We can leaf through. This is having talked about Penny McCann and her guards there, but they're Arabian Nights, but it's through some other journal. Yeah, I won't go into much more detail, right? We don't have much time to carry away here. So this is sort of the self-portraiture cluster, which is new. I don't really have this in the other installation, but I usually have these two pieces, which are self-portraits, or meaning to be self-portraits. This is me attempting to do these projects, and hopefully just theoretically, but not physically, falling on my ass, going, crash. That's one of the theoretic words I can read, crash. These are just indications of, I collected 8,000 feet, so a foot's about this big, films from bombed out movie theaters in the Bourges mostly and around Jumaisi. I would befriend the Syrian soldiers that were guarding the buildings at the time, and they'd say, sure, we don't think there's any landmines there, go ahead. So I would poke around and then go in. This is my studio as we were setting up, and this was the early form of the installation. In the studio, I didn't know I was going to do this installation, but when I came here, I started gathering stuff I was interested in, and this is in Jumaisi, in this place, starting to pin things to the walls. These are my notes. I was keeping these types of post-it notes, where I categorized all the photographs I took during that year, which is another piece that is not with this version of the installation, this photograph.
indicating that. And this is me taking pictures of Class Riyadh Seoul, and our post office was just down this corner. This looks from like it's from the 20s, but it's like the 90s. Yeah. And this, Waldy took these pictures of this strip and this strip. So that's sort of the self-portraiture sort of, and there's more of that here and there about the workings of the installation. And then you get to this major cluster, which sort of a lot of the work was done about South Lebanon. So there's the largest cluster is about South Lebanon. And a lot of the marchers, because everywhere we went, we were taking hours and hours of conversations with parents who had sons and daughters that were martyrs in the resistance. And most of the people we were filming were part of the secular resistance, so the Lebanese National Resistance Movement, which doesn't really, I don't think it's as much credit now, since Hezbollah takes credit for everything during that period of the 80s and 90s. And these are, if you don't know, like Suha Bashara, Tissam Harb, Salman Hagli, and some of these pictures were people's homes, and some of them are shot off of these propaganda videos from the Parti Populaire Syrien. I don't know what the English equivalent is. Which this is 2 hours of these reenactments and documentary footage from the parties and of the different operations, as we call them. And so this is the floor plan of Qiyam, the detention center, and different documents about that, and affidavits that Amnesty International would use, and things about the occupation, about treaties affecting the Middle East. This is like lists. I collected lists and lists of things, lists of regional players. I really want to know a lot of the regional players here. So 3 pages of them. more lists of things that I was making notes of, collective punishments, and that I would use in future pieces, namely death. And lots of lists. And these are 150 hours of video that Waleed translated for me. He was a really hardworking assistant. He's a hardworking guy, what can I say? I really appreciate it. Because otherwise, he wouldn't be able to edit. Yeah.
Questions.
What are the
titles of those?
The titles?
The titles? Yeah, of the
videos
showing.
The titles, these are just loops. They're not films. For the installation.
Installation.
That's from This Is Not Beirut. There's some material taken off a couple of these, plus other material.
This is made.
Yeah, there's some material extracted from that film, This Is Not Beirut, that are in a cut to these loops, and then there's other material added, like this shot's from This Is Not Beirut. That's us talking about what the hell we're doing here, whether anybody really knows what's going on.
Have you always collected this much stuff
in life?
Yes.
Only as a child. I realized as we're doing this installation that when I was a kid going to school, I had a studio in the back of our garage and shelves of all the stuff I would dig up. Because I grew up in Canada and there was a lot of log cabins, it's the stereotype. But it was before it was all developed, I rode my bike around, and now it's all houses. And we would dig up around the cabins, bring back bottles. And now I've just gone back into storage, and I've just, as I was here on Friday, some people I hired brought back all those boxes into my studio in Vancouver, so I have like 30 boxes full of those things, so maybe we'll do another installation. So I think it was partly that, and partly a hoarding thing that my parents grew up during the dirty 30s. Their parents were dirt farmers in Baha, in Iran. And they left after the Ottoman Empire to become dirt farmers in southern Saskatchewan in the wheat belt of Canada just in time for the drought and the Great Depression there. So, well, luckily they had brought hummus, like chickpeas and lentils, and they grew all right. So their neighbors were like, what the hell are they growing? But they did okay. So, I don't know. Sorry, what did you say?
There's just mention of it. But okay. Now...
Now we're in this cluster. I could spend hours talking about this. This cluster represents actually a much larger area, but it's succinct now. It was the Orientalist corner, and there was an Orientalist library, and there's photos of it over there where all the research books that I had cut apart and used were. And this shot is actually from This Is Not Beirut as well. There's a pan where I've got the camera on a rug that I'm dragging by the library. This is actually upside down. But and then the Sheikh and the son of the Sheikh. I found these books. These are the books that the original Valentino films were made.
Rudolph Valentino, early silent film, construction of the Arab and in the West, basically. Written by the wife of a British diplomat, in the 20s, I'm pretty sure. I forgot exactly. But these are enlargements from the pages that you could sit down and read. And then there's other quotes from different sources, both internal and external to this region, metaphorical, descriptive, constructing different moments and images of this area. And same with these. I mean, these are things I've taken out of books of the Orient, especially bastard countries. So this forms its own little piece that plays off of each other. This is from the Battle of Algiers, where they're searching, and the woman carrying the bombs, and she goes through the checkpoint. And this is footage that is nowhere else in the installation. This is raw footage of this guy, American journalist, being shot at and freaking out as if he's ever been shot at. Wondering, what the hell? Why are they shooting at me? And trying to do his reporting at the same time with this downed Israeli jet. This is probably 82, I imagine. And so this is footage, and it's footage, I think I got this footage from New Television, from their archive, and it's also, you can see him running with the camera. Those were big cameras back then. And then there's Bob Hope when he comes to entertain the Marines at Thanksgiving dinner when they're guarding the Beirut airport. And they see Thanksgiving, that's a dead bird. And they look at the hills and they have a term for this, it's called watching the movies. So they're sitting out in the Beirut, eating their turkey and watching the shoof being bombed. And there's a, I think it's a Russian jet.
Yeah, it's a Russian Aeroflot.
I mean, so yeah, this is pretty fascinating material. Bob Hope, of course, dresses like an Arab, which everybody likes to do when they're making jokes. There's a piece there about Elvis Presley dressed as an Arab as well. And his final line is, he starts singing, "I'm on the road to Morocco," I think, which is from one of his movies. Anyways, I'll have to listen to it. Okay, and then this is the book of quotes, which we call it. And so there's four clipboards. You can remove these and take them off. So they're all different. These are quotes of excerpts of letters and things that I've enlarged. So these are pieces of letters from my mom, from my brother, from other people, colleagues from different places. You know, sort of like trying to look at the relations between the diaspora and here, but also just this type of knowledge seeking and communication correspondence. But also the construction of us and of the other, and sort of somewhere between that, and then also my position of being, from the diaspora, coming back here, but also becoming a tour guide for some of the local Lebanese that still had a cross between East and West Beirut, because the psychological divisions were still there, because they had grown up during the wars. And same with going down south. A lot of our friends that we had met, they had never been south, so sometimes people would come along with us. And as we were exploring, they were either revisiting or going to see places they'd never seen. These are copies of all the, UNIFIL crests. So I did a lot of data mining in the UNIFIL center that used to be over by the stadium. I don't know if it's still there. So there's actually some pretty exciting imagery here, where they're very tongue-in-cheek and sarcastic. And, it's all about survival and gambling. And Garfield's in there by the poolside having a drink going, "We survived Lebanon." And then these ones, these are more quotes. And then this one is, these are more letters. This one, this excerpt of a letter from another colleague in Europe. He talks about how our interviewing might be being misconstrued because our organization is such that people are starting to suspect us to be spies. And actually, spies play a very large role in this installation, because it was a major theme in the understanding of Lebanon from abroad. And there was many books, Beirut Spy for one, that I've taken quotes from. But I see them as all attempts to write Lebanon and write Beirut and rewrite it for some type of comprehension. So, and spy, a lot of the journalists were spies.
And they still are.
That's right. And they stayed at these hotels, and the Mayflower, and the San George, and they would hang out at San George Bar. Anyways, we worked with a lot of journalists, but I don't know where we're surprised, but a lot of them helped us, and we shared, like, drivers, or they would come with us and show us around, too. Sana Issa, she was an AP stringer. I don't think she's around anymore, but she was great. And these are a collection of all the pre-war postcards that I collected. I only have photocopies of them in this installation. But so that's another, you know, form of, and those remained in currency for much longer than, you know, the early 90s. Sort of this, I think, urge to hang on to pre-war Beirut, you know, in our psyches.
I think we're going to now head back to...
Wait. Okay. This is a whole other body of work that is also part of the installation called Sites of Demarcation. And these are photographs that I took, and they all have texts that accompany them. But like I was saying, the 80s were full of appropriation, and I didn't take any pictures of real things until I came to London. And because I was doing the video, I was able to shoot video with one hand instead of freeing up the other hand to shoot pictures. That's why they're all sort of like this.
You've made some reference to different versions of the installation. Iteration as an installation, no longer your studio, no longer a workspace, but actually an exhibition space.
Sure. Here. Okay.
How did the first installation come about? Was it your idea, or was it a curator's idea, or?
No, it was my idea. No, curator. I don't know. It was just a matter of, like, in the studio. No, there was no interest prior to starting it. But because I was interested in the imagery and the artifacts and the objects and the documents, and I knew I wanted to use material in the films that I wanted to shoot and use the text, and I wrote a large text out of fragments out of these texts that I actually never ended up using. That's part of the installation. So I had all these things around it, and it became a very organic development of having all these tactile objects, sort of sending out information and trying to pair them and juxtapose them with each other so they could comment and deconstruct and expand upon this sort of solo expression that they were intended for, so that each image would become multi-layered and contradictory at times, but also seductive at times.
And you mentioned that the 80s were a decade where people talked a lot about appropriation. And either the 90s or the 2000s, I think this could be debated, was a decade when, at least in contemporary art, people talked a lot about the archive. And I know that this project has been described many different ways as archival, but I was wondering if you consider this an archive yourself.
Well, at this point it is. Okay. But initially it was a pseudo-archive.
Okay. Like a pseudo-documentary.
Yes.
So critiquing the
archive. Like a pseudo-studio, it was pseudo a lot of things, so I don't really know what it is, but I know it's pseudo a lot of things. So in a way, yeah, it started out being, I would describe it as a pseudo-archive, pseudo-laboratory, pseudo-studio, because it was meant to sort of bring that methodology, that practice, into the gallery and allow people to play with objects. And that was something that people weren't used to. The guards of museums would have to tell people to play with the work, or that they could touch the work, and they would go, that's the first time we are telling people to touch the art. Don't touch this art, but you can touch that art. It's very specific. I think the archive was more, late 90s, 2000s, they were doing huge exhibitions. I never participated in any of that, I don't think. But from appropriation, it seems like a natural jump to working with, like, the materiality of appropriation lends itself to the notion of the archive. And also the notion the archive is never complete, right? So, you know, this piece, if you look at an archive, is full of holes. So this art, I think, that's made in this period of time is full of holes, right? So that's also a need for creating fictions, is to fill some of those holes with the imagination. Imaginary figures, but also, to use it as a trope, and it becomes a trope, but to use it as a way to create positions and have positions speak where there's no maybe appropriate voice.
that you can reproduce otherwise. So, but this piece, I mean, that's where this work differentiates a lot, is there is no construction of an alternative persona except for our personas, and maybe playing up and fictionalizing them. You know?
Okay. And maybe the place.
Oh, the place, yeah.
If you allow me to ask something.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Initially, when we were in the early stage of the project, you explained me that the photo of all of these images were in Beirut, in your studio. You had a studio somewhere in Harm Mihail?
In Had Mustashfa room above Shemesi. Yeah.
Okay, so when you hanged all of these...
Not all of these, but...
Yeah, but it was approximately something like that.
Yeah,
so,
well,
and I find this interesting because I also asked you, in the 90s, did you have art spaces or galleries? And you said no, at that time there were no yet art spaces. So it's interesting that we bring basically an archive that hanged basically in your studio in Beirut.
And yeah.
We bring it from the tide and insert it now in the institutional framework here at the UB. But I think you showed it also in Canada after, right?
Oh, yeah. Sure, many places. But at that time in the 90s, Lionel Gora had this cultural house. What, you know what it's called, you
art
remember?
And
sorry?
Art and culture.
Art and culture. And, you know, people would talk a lot. We'd show things, we'd show films, and there'd be talks. But I don't remember any gallery spaces. There was theater happening and film screenings here and there. But it was just started. We had meetings about developing a media center, and that was part of the plan of that project that I got money for. But there wasn't enough. People were still figuring out how to survive, I think, at that time. And shortly after, Beirut, D.C. started. But at that time, it was still sort of too early, I think, for a media center to develop. But we had a lot of meetings with people trying to see if we could leave the equipment, because I wanted to leave all those video cameras here. But that never managed to happen.
And maybe I'm going to ask two more questions, and then we can...
Sure.
Okay. One thing that's kind of unexpected that I didn't expect to see here is the extent to which, I mean, people talk about the archive, and then they also talk about sort of an archaeological ground or an excavation ground. And it's amazing how many obsolete supports there are here, in terms of, I mean, there's celluloid, there's postcards, there's all these forms of image making. I mean, it's not just like modes of representation and forms of acquiring knowledge, but it's also like the material supports of past artworks. And was that always, I mean, is that part of it for you? Was it always an intention for you to have this?
Well, it seemed like as I did the installations, I would have more residue and artifacts, so it just seemed like continuing the trajectory of trying to represent the practice, it just made sense to continue adding. So there's all the different versions. There's floor plans in the desk, and there's some on the wall from previous versions. So it all becomes part of this loop, yeah.
Okay.
And then the obsolete technologies, there's actually more of them, but there's just like examples of them here, yeah.
Okay. And then the last question, this goes back to Octavian's intro, and then just to kind of pull it maybe to the department, I'm teaching a new class in the art history department on the history of criticism, where actually, and it's really for the first time that I'm reading this text, but with my students, of reading Giorgio Vasari, The Lives of the Artists, and like which is the first sort of, you know, art historical text that talks about periodization and talks about breaking the Renaissance into three periods, but mainly this big contribution is the idea that one generation reacts to the generation that came before it, and that artists learn from other artists. And something like this seems, which is like your date books, the sort of record of your days, the record of your work, and in a way, a record of your comings and goings, and to do like who this might be most valuable to is other artists and younger artists figuring out how you work. And so do you, having done this work here in the 90s, coming back and showing it where potentially the generations that came after the group of artists that were working then, how do you consider this work in yourself in this sort of lineage, in this narrative of artists working here?
As a phantom.
Okay.
Yeah. The work and myself have existed just, you know, very much in a minimal, I think, sort of peripheral way, since...
But at pivotal times.
Yeah, but been with certain people, but I think just as far as it actually being seen, I think there was more, it wasn't seen much. I mean, there was a few tapes at Ashkal Awan or at the Beirut Arts Center and the Media Center, and that's about it. You know, some people have bootleg copies. Even when I came in 92, I would phone up people to go videotape them. They go, yeah, we have a copy of your videotape. I hope you don't mind. It's here. It's been sent around. I go, but yeah, I don't know. I think I've met, I haven't been here for 15 years, right, to Lebanon, but I've met a lot of young Lebanese artists that, you know, I'd never heard of, but that are doing really interesting work, like, you know, last year in Graz, for instance, and different places, younger artists, and there's this whole, you know, there's, I don't know how many generations now since the 90s, at least one, maybe two, at least two, I guess, two and a half generations of younger artists, and it's great. And then it always amazes me to find out that people actually had heard of my work, but I think it's just like rumor, and it's like I say, like it's there's something in the ether, so I don't know. Yeah, and I used to curate a lot in the early 90s, so I kept in, I showed a lot of people that were young at that time, that are older now, obviously. I used to show Emily Jasser's paintings before she started to make installation. I was showing you and some of those shows, and then when it started to become a fad, this Lebanese contemporary art became popular, then I thought, okay, halas. Let the other people do it. It's great.
And maybe now we're open for questions.
Yeah, yeah, any questions? Sure.
Question concerning the 92 year trip coming here. What was your point? I mean, understanding the culture, because you, I mean, you say a few words about understanding the culture, understanding Beirut. What were you actually looking for? Or what came up with it? Because it is about representation. I mean, and you sort of deconstruct this idea of making, you know, a representation of a city. But what was, you know, what did you find? I mean, now looking back to what you have done and so on.
Well, coming back is very strange, because what I found, it wasn't, I mean, I found that, you know, it's an impossibility to understand, period. Not just Beirut, but sort of any subject if you're looking for understanding, but you develop other forms of interaction and engagement. And coming back now, it's like I'm doing these walks, taking pictures, retracing routes, like through the Bourge to the Jemaisi back and forth, and then over to the Ring, and then the other side of the Ring, and then, you know, into Rauche, to Manara, where I used to visit Attel, and then used to be up there, and not be up there in the Manara, but she has an apartment up there, and yeah, all these different walking, because I just like walking and walking and walking, and the city is like really hard to find now, the city I encountered, so I have to, I'm trying to make sense for myself out of the new city, or the way the city is layered. And it's. I think it's impossible to really come
what
to
grips. What about your own work? I mean, in relation to the This Is Not Beirut, for example.
My video, yeah, it continued from more from up to the south, in fact, in that type of structural format, where I did a lot of work going through like former Yugoslavia, and then I shot in Afghanistan recently, another 40 hours, making tapes of people talking. This idea of the real, and using that, that form of representation to, so like the first piece I made afterwards was the film with Suha Bashara, which in the library, and that's like a 45 minute conversation, and it's just me speaking off camera to her in front of the camera, and so like that type of sort of extreme sort of interrogatory conversational format is where I went after this. So really paring it down in a way, but just having it expand from a more singular subject, complex subject.
Can I actually use privilege of sitting at the table to just continue that? I was thinking I had the same kind of question in mind. Is there some sense in which coming to Beirut, all the other places that you'd been to the Palestinian, to the occupied territories, was there some sense in which, if I could put it this way, I somehow imagine that you, say you're a collector, right, and you're taking films and you're taking videos. Was there some point at which somehow Beirut suddenly transformed your work?
and made what you were doing anyway come together in a particular way. So it sort of formed you as the artist that you became. Is that
well? I think it came at a pivotal time. You know, it was right after grad school, after post-year program at the Whitney Independent Program. And it came at a pivotal time because it gave me that space and that time to focus on my practice. I wasn't running around doing other jobs, and it gave me the environment, you know, of just spending 24 hours a day thinking and working and thinking and working. So I think that time period of where Beirut was and where I was really, for me, was really productive, yeah. And it's the first time I was able to bring lots of different elements of my work together into one piece, where previously they were more discrete, like wall pieces, wall and text pieces, wall with audio tape, video practices, drawing and tearing up photographs. But to bring all these elements of engagement together and having them play off each other, yeah. So.
You referred to the also Leon Wallace in your works, and now like we're looking at the time span of about 15 years, not simply like metaphorically or the subliminal level that, you know, but it's other cause. There's a protracted civil war, but there are actually ongoing civil wars in the region. Do you think the conditions of representation have changed? If you were to come back, let's say, to the region, would your work call for a similar kind of an archival practice, archival or pseudo-archival impulse? Or do you think the conditions are different of both media representation, but also like technologies of reproducibility that call for other ways of engaging?
Yeah, I think technology is huge, huge factor, the technologies of representation. And where we are now, yeah, I think it would be totally a very, very different approach if I was to make work here again. And I think because there's also a lot of work being made by people here, that there's not a need to make certain types of work anymore because a lot of different projects are being done. But I think, you know, through technology and these representation through social media, for instance, and just through the devices that are now used as the web of connectivity in the city, more so than and the web of the mass of connectivity and lack of connectivity through technologies, old and new, the automobile versus the cell phone, and those overlaying and overlapping and butting up against each other. I think there's a lot of material there, yeah, still. So that's another reason I haven't been back here, because when I was here 15 years ago, I shot 40 hours of material that I had never have time to edit. But it's still like, and I knew if I came back, I'd probably have to do another project. I'm going to start doing stuff and collecting stuff. But I have only taken pictures, who knows what will happen with that. But yeah, if I came here for a protracted period of time, it would be stuff to do. There's no shortage. But there's a lot of people here, so I don't feel I need to come back. So it's in good hands with these artists here. Yeah, you have a question? Are you waving? Oh.
Jim has a question.
I just kind of, you were raised in Kelowna.
Kelowna, BC. That's the western province of Canada.
I'm just kind of curious because I've never known you in Canada, never seen you in Canada, though I lived in Vancouver for a long time. I'm just kind of curious about what do Canadians think of your work? Like, how are you placed within that landscape?
Oh yeah, I should give you one of these brochures because there's actually a guy that writes about it in the context of the Vancouver School of Photography, which is, we call it the Boys Club. Jeff Wall, Rodney Graham, Ken Lum, Ian Wallace, you know, who are international superstars. But I don't consider myself a Vancouver artist. I mean, I went there after being in New York, and if I was really interested in being a popular or a known artist, I would have stayed in New York, but nature was calling, so I had to leave. I had to go back to Canada. Also, living in America for protracted periods of time is challenging in different ways than living here, both politically, but different ways. So Canada. I'm pretty marginal in Canada. I mean, I'm marginal everywhere. I'm proud of it. I'm appreciated amongst the more marginal types. I did get this award, which is, it's a Governor's General Award. It's one of the biggest, it's the only award, large award, national award in Canada that they give out every year to seven people. But I thought that was weird. They gave it to me for the video work for my lifetime achievement, which I hope hasn't ended. They're going to kill me afterwards.
But in Canada, the work that is considered more controversial and more political is
First Nations
work. Right?
Well, no, the Palestinian... A lot of people know me... Well, before that, they knew me as this guy who made work about Palestinians. That's all they knew was the Palestinians.
Okay.
Because it caused a lot of... it was... People tried to censor the work. They tried to censor Suha Bashara's work. There was shown in one of our national museums. The director tried to shut it down before the day before the opening. And we had an email campaign. People from all over the world forced the parliament to talk about it. And the prime minister, our prime minister at the time, we don't have a president and a prime minister, we just have one, had to stand up and say the show has to go on as planned. And, and it was all due to the film of Suha Bashara and the other piece where they had, you know, misrepresented it. But yeah, stuff like that made national press. And, you know, if you can get the prime minister to speak up on your behalf, then they started knowing, they knew me for that work. And, you know, and then the First Nations work gets some interest, yeah. So I don't know. Canada's a big place, yeah. But the art world's still pretty small. But I'm more known now. But it's still, I'm not a commercial artist. So and Canada's not a commercial art place. So it's great, actually.
Sure. I guess I'm just curious because there's a lot of Lebanese artists who are better known overseas than they are in Lebanon. And I'm wondering if that's the case for you as well.
I don't know. In pockets, yeah. Like some people in Berlin know me, some people in Vienna. Whatever. Yeah.
In interacting with the installation and hearing you talk about it, the fact that people could play with it seems very important. Do you include that as a layer of your work to look at people who are actually interacting with the work?
I don't photograph people interacting with it or do another layer on top of that. But what I do have done since is a lot of workshops, where I'm working with people and we're making huge paintings together, and I love it because it's my only chance I get to paint, which I love painting but never have the time. So I've done like 2.5-year program of workshops with the First Nations youth from 63 tribes or nations up in Canada, up in their home territories, and where we would sit around and we'd sketch out people's stories. I mean, people sketch out their own. And same within my neighborhood. I live in the poorest neighborhood in Canada, and I did work for 5 years there. I set up a collective, and we would do work on this off the street, drop-in workshops, and film and video. So I think that layer of engagement with people engaging with work is more interesting. But yeah, I've never. I photographed people looking at the installation, but I haven't used that in the installation.
So I'm wondering how much of a chance in relation to the installation there is for people to discover things you didn't realize were there.
Sometimes people bring things with them and leave them. They've done that. And only once, the last time I showed this, people stole things. But it never only happened in Vancouver for some reason. Maybe they thought, hey, that's nice, I'll take it. Like, you know, it's the Wild West. You know. People do come and then they come back and spend hours. That's what I do though. And I know, remember in New York, because usually I try to have comfortable seating and for people, and they'll bring their lunch, they'll bring their dogs, they'll bring their kids, and they'll like look at things because they'll find stuff that they're okay with. Yeah. And different openings, I remember there were like a lot of times when I showed this, it was the first time that in the Arab community of that particular city would have something like this that would be representing them in a critical or looking at these things. So you'd have like wide array of more people that wouldn't normally come to a gallery would come. Yeah, all dressed out, kaffiyas and everything, and you know, all that. So, yeah, and the work, like, you know, you wouldn't believe it, but like the work that I curated would often, people would try to censor that too, and like board members would pushing for the show would, you know, resign immediately after because it was so difficult for them to get a show of Middle Eastern issued work in their gallery. These are artist run centers, they're supposed to be more political. Anyways, it's come a long way. Any other?
Natasha, you have a question etched on your forehead. No?
Is it in English or Arabic? I can't read it.
I have not sort of indicated it. I don't know.
Okay. Maybe Angela?
Yeah, just one association. The fact that you've got all these papers, personal notes, and so on. Images, collected stuff, and it feels like, you know, when mourning, you just go through the papers of somebody and then you just you know, discover them, read them, and it becomes extremely personal in a sense where actually, you know, I'm trying to follow your track, forget about Beirut or whatever is being represented, but it's the person, the way, you know, this person, and I don't know, it may be, you know, connected to a kind of mourning or, you know, looking for somebody in an absence or something, very dramatic, but I mean, this is, I don't know why.
Well, there is a whole stack of faxes on the desk and in the file drawers of personal letters from girlfriends of the time, girlfriend of the time, and family and colleagues and stuff. So you do get, I don't know if mourning, it's more like, maybe the mourning is just, I don't know, the history, you know, the nostalgia, right? The pain, you know, nostos logos, pain of returning home, right? For me, this was never home, but it was in a lot of the work. I think there's a sense of nostalgic expressions or trying, and then that's part of the deconstruction, is trying to break this apart. So it's not just an emotional connectivity, but it's still there, lingering, right? The pain is lingering throughout. So I'd say pain maybe more than mourning. But there's pain and there's sensuality and there's beauty. So I hope there is anyways. I hope that draws people in, like even the pretty colors, you know, and sort of the pain of labor of going through all this material as well. And the daunting task as a viewer maybe that you come in and maybe it's just too much to bear.
But there's certainly also loss. I mean, there's really the loss of the city. I mean, even, you know, between when you filmed and now, seeing what's...
So maybe that's the sense that you're carrying with you. This is just bringing it out.
No, it's something, I mean, seeing contemporary art usually...
makes you sad?
And this kind of, you know, displaying very personal thoughts, actually, because you're sort of giving us bits and pieces of thoughts. It's the first time I knew the association, but I think of, you know, sort of displaying, exploring, archives and documents.
Angela? My question is a bit more prosaic. It's not inquisitive or moralistic, but I want to position it as a historical question. It has been circulating in different forms from the beginning of this conversation, but please understand this is a historical question. Do you somehow feel responsible for what was to come, for a certain kind of institutionalized art practices and practices of art institutions that were to take off since late 90s until now? How do you position yourself now in that landscape retrospectively?
Well, I've always, you know, the critique of the institutional critique and the critique of the institutional critique. I've always thought of my practice, I mean, not thought of it, but I've always practiced as interventions into institutions. It's always seemed to be difficult for people to show my work. And I don't know, it's partly because of me and my work, but also partly because when I do work, it usually pushes the institutions to beyond their limits that they're normally think they're capable of, both practically and I hope, you know, theoretically, and just sometimes in very small ways. And sometimes it's just so overwhelming, the installation, that they don't know what to do with it. So I don't feel responsible, I don't think. Maybe I'm irresponsible. I don't know. I mean, I just do what I do and try. I mean, of course, we're always reacting to what we do before and what else other people are doing around us. And I think if you're not challenging the institution, then you've succumbed as an artist to a paradigm that's going to trap you, right? And if you're doing a commercial practice, you have those demands of reproducing. Similarity, the simulacra takes over, right? Because there's different buyers. They want to buy something like that if they can't buy that, right? But if you have no commercial interest, which I don't, which is great, or it's not much institutional interest, I mean, I should thank you and Waleed Rad for meeting with Octavian. Otherwise, the show never would happen. It might have been like 30 years instead of 15 years, and then for Rico agreeing and I don't know whose arms you guys had to twist, but yeah, I mean, look how long it took to do this show here. Like, you know, it wasn't just, you know, it wasn't easy, right? So I don't, I'm not really answering your question, but no, I don't feel responsible.
Sorry, Natasha and then Nadia.
My question is, did the representational concern precede your visit to Beirut?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, because I came to Beirut, like I was trying to say, looking at this ground of representation of the issues that I was hearing about, trying to see how what other forms of other practices of those productions of those representations could be done here and looked at and critiqued and analyzed of the, you know, the party representations, the personal representations, the encounters with people. But it, but definitely here it grew, yeah.
Was
it an expectation that
you would,
maybe
not felt that you would struggle to be able to represent this, I don't know, you hadn't been to the front, right?
Sorry, can I hear your last part?
There was,
did you know that you were going to struggle with how to work, how to deal with this place?
Yeah, I expected a struggle. It's part of the pain. It's part of the way I work. But it's not, I mean, but I enjoy that. It's not really, I don't see it as a struggle. I just see it as, oh, you have to be open to working and working and working. You have to be, you have to like working, basically, which I mean artworking, like collecting material, absorbing, asking questions. So you have to like that practice. Yeah.
I mean, I think I meant it as a personal struggle. I mean,
personal
in terms
struggle.
Of how, if your trip was maybe motivated by how you identified as, I mean, or how you identified in relation to the space that is Beirut, and whether that representational concern has something to do with how you identified and whether that preceded your business, or if it was, there were separate concerns. I mean, how, what you identified as and how
I think I understand. Do you understand?
Yeah,
okay. Well, tell me if I'm wrong. But I don't. I'm very good at not getting like emotionally involved. Like remaining distant is a talent I have. Alienation comes to me naturally. So throughout this project, there's a lot of pictures from car windows, using the car as. Identifying, you know, that metaphor of alienation, that distancing, because I think through distancing you can reflect. And when you're in the moment and so immersed, you can't really reflect. It's like, and also this idea of time, like of news coverage and footage, and, you know, it has to be instantaneous. Time is, so it's contradictory to that as well. So some of my distancing is like 10 years before I get back to the material and work with it. So that also, so emotionally, I only get emotionally affected when I am in instances like this, and it's my family or somebody, or friends, but usually it's much after, and I try not to think of how that plays into the context. But in these last speeches I had to give for this award, I broke down to tears, like after the second sentence, because my parents were there. Now, I don't want to talk about it, because I'm tearing up already. But next question.
Well, now I've got two. Not a question, but how... You were just saying, you were just talking about nostalgia, and now you're saying you kind of alienated yourself. But how can we, I mean, the contradictory, I mean.
Because I don't feel the nostalgia. I don't have the nostalgia.
You don't?
Because I never was from here, so I'm not returning.
Or it's a phantom nostalgia.
Yeah, it's a phantom nostalgia. I'm not from
phantom
here.
Nostalgia.
I'm just looking at nostalgia as it exists.
Right.
In the air that I'm floating through as a phantom. No, but also through representation or through others' nostalgia.
Okay, the other is not a, it's just a chronological understanding. So, of course, all of this was collected in 92, but when was this put together? I missed out somewhere.
And actually, I started collecting in 88, that trip, but
yeah,
the bulk of it came during that year, 92, and then I kept on adding it until 2005.
Until this is the first time?
Until now, I added some new things. This was never shown before.
Okay.
But 95 was the first time it was shown as an installation.
Yeah, 95 was the first time it was shown as an installation.
Ah,
So it took a long time.
So it took like three years.
Yeah, sure. Because you have to propose a show, you have to get a show, you have to come up with some type of diagram floor plan. Actually, the original floor plan doesn't look too much like this. It's in on that column there. You can leave somewhere underneath. There's some things I still want to make that are on that original floor plan. Like I had a stack of all of newspapers that had aged over the years, really yellow, that were all looking at the Palestinian conflict and the representations of that. So I wanted to bolt it to the ceiling, actually. I never got around to doing that. But anyway, somebody else could do that. Sorry, do you have a second question?
Yeah, so the first time it happened in 95, and then you started building on it. And it has developed. Yeah. So has someone asked this question about the difference between the first one and this, for example?
You can see in the top drawer of the desk, you can look through the stuff in the drawer, but there's a stack of like 100 and, I don't know, who numbered them? Oh, I think 101 images. So you can see earlier versions. And the first version was very messy. It was like... It's like an explosion of stuff. So it took me the first or two versions to start refining and trying to place. Because literally what I did after that, and I do now, I wish I never did the first few installations, but I do now with this version and other installations, but never with this piece before, what I did on the floor here, but with my Afghanistan work, for instance, I paper the whole floor. And I spend hours or days laying things out in relationship to the architecture and the cluster, you know, within certain clusters that had a set arrangement, but then refining them throughout the space. So it's a very contemplative, meditative act, and I can't do it with anybody else. I have something you have to do alone, right?
Sure.
So it becomes more refined and cleaner, and so you can look through the different versions. So they're there.
I want to ask something about your relation to the local art historical or to the Lebanese heritage, right? Because in a way, you worked here, you came here in the 90s, and then you went away. And then sometimes I have this feeling while speaking with you that you are not quite sure how do you want to position yourself towards the Lebanese art scene or the Lebanese. Like, if I ask you, do you consider yourself a Lebanese artist or not? Like, because you do artworks in Africa. Afghanistan, but I guess you are not claiming that you
are
Afghanist, right? Here, of course, your family has roots here and you've been here in the 90s. How do you want to be perceived? Do you want to, what's your fantasy about? Like, do you want to be regarded as a world? Well, like, can you speak something about it? Like, what is your relation to the local art scene? Everything is okay, everything is...
That's very personal.
No, I'm
okay, like, just professionally, I'll keep it.
Yeah. I'm speaking, like, of course, as much as you can say, but...
In public,
like,
okay.
Like, how would you describe your relation to the other Lebanese artists or other Lebanese art institutions? Like, I don't know, if you can say anything at all, but it's okay to say that I don't want to speak about that. I don't want to say anything about that. It's also okay.
Well, I think when Catherine DeVee started doing her curating and a lot of other people started curating here, I was not recognized as a Lebanese artist because you had to be substantially from here.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a distinction made because I never ever got included in any shows with other Lebanese artists. So actually, I don't mind that because I'm born and raised in Canada. It was just I made work here and my family came from here originally. So it had some, I think it has some relationship to practices here, like definitely. That's what I'm told. People don't consider me as a Lebanese artist except in Canada or North America or Europe when it's to their advantage to exoticize, you know, Lebanese art. So here we're listing me as Syrian, Lebanese, Canadian. Because when my grandparents came, it was Syria, you know, it was 1920s. And then it became Lebanon, so we have to bracket the two. So I'm sort of not Syrian, not Lebanese, not Canadian. I'm Canadian, I have to admit. But that party coming here in the 88 to 92 was also to see if there was any part of my identity that had any association with being here besides Hummus, Tabbouleh, Mejedra, you know, and social social gatherings and social manners and hospitality and all that. So, yeah, there wasn't. But I think, I mean, I've had ongoing relationships with artists here, just like with anywhere else, but we have a particular affinity, I think, or I do with them anyways, just because, it's a large practice I've had here. And, yeah, again, I've known them over that 25-year period, a lot of people. But I don't know. You have to ask them.
Okay, I will.
It's better. I'm the wrong person to ask.
Are there any more questions?
Yes.
No.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me, Adia.
Thank you.